NA DBL Southing. NADBF from WQ. Good morning. Good morning. So do you have it in the truck now or still coming? I put it in immediately after talking to you last night. You guys convinced me to give it a fair shake, and I truly do love everything about this radio. Now that it's fixed, it's like, what an annoying 2 months that was. All right, well, sounds great. So, yeah, all right. Now, at least give it a try. You got stung. It's not the norm. You know, there's enough of us that got them. So it's a shame that they didn't handle it differently, though. You know, that was pretty piss poor of them. You buy their flagship radio, and instead of just offering to exchange it for a new one, literally days after you bought it, they put you through all that. And that's crazy. That's the only complaint I have about the whole situation from, I can't remember when I bought it. I bought it, like, beginning of December, maybe? No, November. So, you know, within a week I noticed it, not even a week, and immediately addressed it with them, and it's like, you know, it's brand new. You said it's not out of warranty just because it's Mars modded. So then let me send it to you. You send me another one. I don't care if it's a refurbished one. Just give me one that works. While you figure out what's wrong with this one, and all's good in the world. But instead I had to send it back twice, the first time at my expense, and then, you know, it's just... yeah, I agree. It could have been handled much better, but it is fixed now, so at least they did remedy the issue. It's just frustrating. Yeah, well, fixed now, so give it a whirl and see what you think. I don't know much about that other radio. I have an ID51. So, you know, it's going to have that same era looking, but it's a handheld. It's not a mobile. A lot of guys got those and like them, and I've heard good things about their radios in general on FM. I, as you probably know, I'm not a fan of E-Star, but I've heard that the radios work pretty good on FM as well. So, not a big fan of the monochrome display. That was one thing about the Yaesu. I don't know what they do, what color palette or the number of bits they use, but I seem to be able to read their displays a lot better than most, so I do like that about them. Yeah, the 5100 is getting pretty dated. I don't remember when it released, but in my opinion, to my ears, which I thought I had bad hearing, but apparently I'm sensitive to high-frequency crap, it sounds better. I think it sounded better than my 200. I think it sounded better than the 300. I think it sounds better than the 500. But I'm 100% with you. The display sucks, but I think it's a 10 or 12-year-old display. That was the first thing I noticed this morning when I got in the truck and turned on the radio. I'm like, oh, my God, it's so easy to find what I'm looking for on this display that's like an eighth of the size, or not a quarter of the size of the 5100 because it's in color. A little room in there for Anthony or whomever. Haven't heard from the Donald in recent days, so I know he's back from Daytona. But yeah, no, I agree. I had color displays before, and you know that they're whatever they're with the ICOM, so. I'm guessing it's probably also pretty good based on, you know, the 7300, the 9700 I have. I don't know if the 5100 brings any of that UI goodness to the 5100, you know, it may, but I do know that the Yaesu's not terrible. It's got a lot of menu, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, in an FM rig, it's a lot less of an issue. You know what I want? I want to be able to get to tone, you know, things like tone and repeater offset and things like that quickly, you know. You can get to VFO pretty quickly. You can set a tone pretty quick on that. And customize that little short menu. So you can put the things you need. There's only a couple of things you really need in an FM rig, you know, quickly. There you go. So what's the temp today? 39 already. Man, spring is here.
K8RUH. Warren Anthony, Sean, you're aware Romeo just dropped off. I had to flip over Warren and flip a little rough on drive. But yeah, the 5100 is sweet because it's got proper banks. So I have everything sorted by, you know, local node, GMRS, FRS, Marine, all the things that it's not supposed to. And it's touchscreen, so I can just hit the bank button and it pulls up the banks. And I can hit the channel button and I can pull, you know, type in a frequency. And, like, it's very tablet-esque, which was nice and convenient. It was really nice for driving. I don't know. No, I have not a single complaint about that radio other than the display is getting pretty dated. Go ahead, Anthony.
After all that talk, I can't believe you decided to go back to the Yaesu. When I got your text last night, I about fell out of my chair laughing. Over to you, Sean.
Well, you might be able to blame me a little bit for that. He was hemming and hawing, and, I think he was talking to Greg, and Greg was kind of saying, you know, well, you know, it's a good radio, blah, blah, blah. And he was, I think he was vacillating a little, then I did and kind of said, you know, you owe it to yourself to at least try it, you know. I mean, if they got it fixed, which he said they did, then why don't you give it a whirl? So it would be my fault to go to...
At the end of the day, I bought this radio specifically because it checked every box I wanted for a mobile radio, and it still does now that it's working the way it should, and my logic was not only should I try it because it's the exact radio I wanted, but I'm going to lose less money selling the 5100 than I would selling the 500, so I have not a single complaint about the 5100. It's just I didn't like having an external speaker. Stupid little things, stupid nitpicks. The 500 is just a much, much cleaner installation in the truck. Anthony?
That's cool, and yeah, it was funny because, you know, I think you and I have talked over time that if I had to go back and do it again, I would have bought a 5100 rather than a 2730. And man, it crossed my mind, like, oh, should I buy that thing? What could I do with my 2730? How much money could I get for it? And I just stopped myself and shook my head and was like, there's no way I'm buying that radio. He needs to sell it to somebody else. You don't need it.
I don't know, Anthony. 5100. Ooh, baby. Dakota.
Real quick, do you get a bunch of static when the carrier drops?
I do not. Go ahead.
I wonder if I have a setting not right in here. But yeah, it'll carry will drop and I get some squelch. And then, maybe it's my squelch. I don't know. Anyway, Anthony, I was going to give you a sweetheart deal on it. But no, I have absolutely no use for two mobile radios, but I would like to probably do some bartering or some trading and turn that into something different.
I've been eyeing too many other non-radio related things lately, so I got to keep my money in my wallet. I don't think I have anything that you want to barter for at the moment, so I think I need to keep my money in my pocket and buy a camera or a new shotgun or something fun like that. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but I think I'm out of the market at the moment. Over to you, Sean.
Yep, there you go. I'm thinking about my 2A collection. Of course, I don't need a radio, but, what was I going to say? Oh, as far as the squelch goes, it's a lot of guys, if you're running cone squelch, a lot of people have their squelch underneath that set too low, so the cone squelch takes a second to clamp up, and the existing squelch, you know, if it's set too low, you'll hear a burst while the tone squelch is locking up. So check your underlying regular squelch if you're in tone squelch. That is exactly what it was. I flipped to tone and code, and then I flipped back to tone squelch, and I realized that my squelch was literally buried at the bottom. So I don't know how I wasn't getting more noise in, but good. Simple fixes. I like those. I don't have to send it back to Yaesu.
That's the last thing you need to do is send it back again.
Well, he's got an all new radio. They replaced it all. So, what do you? I guess you're sure to get it that way. So I don't think they heard the problem the first time, because if they had, then why would they have released it? And when they said they found something in the audio circuit that you know, they replaced, you thought, well, they must have heard it, right? So, you know, they specifically named the component they found. And it made sense. So I'm thinking maybe they just, they couldn't hear it, and they just said, well, must be that, let's replace that. So, I don't know. Really piss poor, you know, troubleshooting. Kind of weird. If they even did what they said the first time around, who knows? I doubt they lied about it, but still, I'm thinking they didn't hear it or something. How could that happen? Very weird set of events that led you to this place. Yes, it was. I did have to pull the resistor off the board last night, though, so I do know that it is a new board, which I think that was the cleanest Mars mod I've ever done, so I was happy about that. And it still does make that exact high-pitched squeal, but it is only when a transmission, when I'm receiving and it drops and then APRS beacons at the same time. That's the only time I've heard it so far. It's not doing it when you guys are talking, so that's all I care about. APRS, I'm just messing with it. I'm probably not going to leave it on.
Now I know why you sent me that text this morning with the map of APRS, because now you have that radio back in your truck and you're beaconing APRS. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
I'll tell you what, we got to get that fixed at the county building, and it's a real simple fix, but I'm gonna have to get some help. It's a rooftop job. You just got to clamp an antenna to a pipe, and then, I mean, it's nothing difficult from what I recall. Clamp a pretty easy antenna to a pipe and connect up the antenna. Should be able to get all that running again. The weather's going to be up in the, it's going to poke into the 40s, maybe have to put that on the agenda.
I've still not found a real-world use case for APRS other than my radio has it, so I'm going to try it. But I'm honestly pretty happy with that little iGate Raspberry Pi put together. I did it literally for testing purposes, and it's coming extremely handy because I know my stuff works before I leave the house.
Sean, that'd be pretty cool if it got fixed. I know. Like Dakota said, I don't have a real good use case for it, but I know it's pretty fun to play with, and I enjoyed it when that DigiPeter was up at the county building. I used APRS semi-regularly to screw around and track myself on maps and things like that. So that'd be pretty cool. Over to you.
Yeah, I've used it quite a bit with TrackR, letting the phone do the actual logging, but it all goes through APRSFI, so, you know, you get to see, and that one's, you know, really, you know, the problem with APRS, I travel across the country, and that you can go long distances between APRS nodes. And so, you know, and all you'll get is a straight line from the last one. So if the last one you had was in, you know, Indianapolis, and then you don't hit another one until, you know, St. Louis, then you'll get a big straight line from Indianapolis to St. Louis. So that's the biggest problem with, APRS. There's just not a lot of, you know, nodes out there to give you the granularity of, like, let's say, a phone app. But, you know, a phone app is not, you know, just like mesh traffic and everything else, that's not what we want to do. The point is to do this without. So, yep, wouldn't mind getting that one up. And, you know, I asked the guys, would there be any logical reason to put another one in the south part of the county, like on the hospital or something? And they were like, nah, I just need the one, really. So, I guess. You know, so I'm gonna focus on getting that one working. I've got the guys up in St. Clair County. They're bugging me to help them with a repeater project, and I've got a couple other repeater groups asking me to help them with some stuff. So my dance ticket is really full. Dakota?
At ADDF. We need to get Lapeer County on your dance ticket.
I know them guys. Anthony.
Yeah, Sean, you know, selfishly, one on the south end of the county would be fantastic for me. Like you always say, I'm in the dead zone, no man's land. It's, like, super unique because it's far enough south in Macomb County that nobody's concerned about it, and it's far enough north in Wayne County that nobody's concerned about it. So I definitely struggle with coverage of repeaters and things like that, as you know. So it'd be cool to get something on the south end if that was ever an opportunity, because I can get in to the one on the county building, but I gotta be using a little bit of power. I've struggled getting into the DigiPeter at the county building with a handheld, but I'm usually able to do it from my driveway, so it would just be neat to have something a little closer in no man's land down there by me.
Yeah, so what happens down there is it's just anything you put down there doesn't cover a large enough area. There's usually something, you know, it's like, geez, there's something right over, you know, in downtown Detroit, or geez, there's something right up in Macomb County. What they don't take into account is neither one of those poking at that area, and anything you would put in that area would only service that area. So it's just a small little enclave, you know. Anything you put there, what it would cover, anything, you know, coverage from other locations. So all of it adds up to there's just, you know, you got to have a real, someone like myself who has an interest in putting some stuff down there for, you know, personal reasons. I just, you know, I'd like to think, what all would we want there? Because I do have a couple of sites that I have access to, and we got to think, you know, long and hard about what would we want. You know, I know obviously I'd want something for the FBI network, so a small repeater, you know, low profile repeater that covered that area really well would be nice. You know, and then maybe, you know, and then of course, you know, if I'm going to be monkeying around and throw some mesh-tastic thing up, but that's so, who cares? I mean, yes, no. But what else, you know, what else would be desirable down that way? You know, an MI5 base machine. You know, the problem with any of that is you start running into a repeater console. There's no pairs, right? So even if we could put them down there, the area that they recovered would be so small that, you'd be getting a pair and, pairing up a pair for something that could probably cover a lot better, a lot more. Coveted frequency pairs should be used for something that's beneficial to a larger, the greater good. Whatever, got to give it some thought. Dakota?
I'm actually pretty fortunate. I think a lot of it has to do with the terrain that I'm traveling through, where it's pretty wide open, so I'm able to get anything I want in my commute. Getting over 69 is pretty much my threshold of where I can't jump into this network. But I'm not gonna lie, I kind of like the fringe. It keeps it radio, in my opinion. I feel like if I was full quieting rock solid all the time, it would be like talking on the phone. So the little bit of static's kind of a reminder of this is RF. I don't know, maybe that's just the nerd in me. But I don't know, that ham website you guys sent me, there's all kinds of people out by me, but who knows if they're active. But you get north of 69, it's like there's not a whole lot going on, but again, I'm never up there, I don't care.
Yeah, Dakota, I'm able to get into pretty much anything that I want to get into with my mobile. I would just love to be able to be within HT range of a repeater that got me into FBI network, just because it would be so much easier. I could sit in my backyard, talk on a radio, sit in my garage, talk on a radio, would have for exactly what we're doing right now, instead of having to be in the car or on a node. But it is what it is. I make do, like you said. It's the struggle makes it what it is. Otherwise, it'd be a cell phone or e-com.
Well, that I know. I've been saying it for a while now, but that is one thing I do would like to solve. I have my own selfish reasons, and I do have a couple of definite avenues to make that happen. I've even got the frequency pair issue figured out as well. So I think that is likely to happen, maybe even when the weather breaks. So, but I have get together with and discuss some things. The other location, not so much. Just kind of do it. So I got to get on it. But I got a million other things I got to get on. Ah, geez. That's what makes it fun. I'm not complaining, that's for sure. Anyhow, I am pulling up here to Scarbuckaroos. So if I don't return when it comes back around to me, it's because I'm checking up the barista. Dakota?
For what it's worth, I don't know where I'm getting picked up by, but from 25 and 53 all the way to my parking spot, I'm beaconing and getting picked up by a digipeater. So I don't know where exactly it would be, but there is some APRS receiving near here.
Yeah, when I've looked at the APRS maps on APRS FI, .fi, there's a couple people that I think have I-gates around town. I can't remember exactly where. I think there's one in Shelby, maybe, but I'd be shocked that it got that kind of coverage. But maybe they have a good high-gain antenna on their roof or something to the
I-gate.
Who knows?
That's the problem with mine, is it's in my basement, so I know it's not going to do very good, but the fact that I was, half a mile away at the gas station and I was picking up, I thought that was pretty impressive. Did you ever get yours working? Did you get it set up?
I have not yet because I have been trying to make time to go through the spider web of network cables that are in my entertainment center because I'm trying to make sense out of it, and which is also kind of your fault because I got inspired by that box that you put together that you have with your nodes in it and everything, and I just haven't got around to executing. But I think you were telling me to just use like a little mag mount antenna. I have one of those. I'm trying to figure out how I can get that in the attic so it's higher up and then have, so I can get a little bit of range on it instead of having the antenna in the basement. In old houses like mine, I'm not going to get much out if I put the antenna in the basement.
What you could do is put a PoE hat on it for $13, run a network drop into your attic, and then just plug the pie in up there with the antenna.
What kind of hat did you say?
My iGate Pi has a PoE hat on it, so it's power over Ethernet. So there's no USB-C going to the Pi. It's literally one Ethernet cable, and that's how it gets networking power.
Ah, okay. So then I would take, then I could just run, I wouldn't need a power cable, you're saying, and then I could put the whole unit up in the attic. That's an interesting concept.
Yes, welcome to my dilemma with rooftops.
Yeah, you know, I have a UHF-VHF antenna on the roof, and I have my Tastic node up there also, and I just don't want to keep going up and putting more stuff on the roof if I don't have to. So, and this is definitely one that I don't have to. So I got to figure something out, but that's a good idea. I got to look into that.
I think it's the IT guy in me, but if I can power it with PoE, that's what's happening. Power cables.
So let me make sure.
Yep. No, I agree. That's a great way to go.
That's what Fred's working on. A couple of nodes for down here, Meshtastic nodes, and that's the operative. So they have to be remotely powered and manageable, so that we can stick them up in, you know, compromising places. Not compromising, but difficult. Yeah, I'm going to get them up good and high. I might even come into a tower, get them up in the air really high, get the antennas, you know, 60-degree view in all directions. And to do that, you know, it would be a pain in the arse if I had to go up there to flash the firmware or something. So it'll be nice to PoE up. And then if you have to reboot them, all you got to do is just plug them at the warm, toasty inside end. Plug them back in. I think. I have to think about that. But, anywho, all good stuff. At least it's coming in the Meshtastic world. It's already available in most others. So, for what it's worth, all right, I'm pulling in the parking lot here, gentlemen. Dakota, glad it's working good and you can get it in. We'll see how the coming days and weeks go, but sounds like a big thumbs up, and we'll be back on the radio here in a little bit. Anthony, why don't you go ahead? W8F.
Dakota, to put one of those PoE hats on, is it just a matter of taking the pie out of the case and soldering a new board on? Is that what you're talking about?
Sean, take it easy, man. Maybe I'll catch you on the drive home here. But yeah, so far so good. Very happy with it now that it's working right. And Anthony, no, it just sits on the GPIO pins. You'd have to relocate the fan wires to the right 5-volt and ground. But it's super easy, and it fits. I can't remember what case. It should fit in the case that you have. I have a Unistorm case. I like those a lot because they have so much ventilation and they have a taller footprint, so I can fit more stuff in them. Like your Shari, that's the case. They're like $13 on Amazon. But, yeah, that's what I would do, man. I would grab a PoE hat. You just set the thing on top. Your RTL is a dongle, so that just plugs in the USB, so you got plenty of room under there, and then you just run a drop into your attic or wherever you want it, and you're done.
That is an interesting concept. I'm going to have to look that up when I get here in the office here. Are they, is it, what are those costs? I mean, is it like a $10 part, a $20 part?
The one I bought was a super low profile. I think it was like $17.
Okay, and then you were saying you dropped up in the middle of the last one, but you move the fan, and then you have space. You use the exact same case that was in, or do you got to get a different case? Was that what you were saying? It's like that Shari that I have. It's I see you sent me the link to it already.
I think the link's perfect. I just switched back to Warren. Yeah, it's $15. You know, it just sits right on top of the GPIO pins, and you just relocate where the fan's plugged in. Right now, the fan's plugged into the main GPIO. The Pi Hat has a relocation set of pins for the fan or for power. So, I mean, it's literally just moving two wires and plugging them in. There's no soldering. There's no anything. And that can of kit case you have, I'm pretty sure it'll fit in there. Worst case scenario, you're out another $13 for the Unistorm case. So look into that. That's the way to go. I think, I can't remember, if you look in the APRS topic on Telegram, I'm pretty sure I posted a picture of the Pi before I put it together, but maybe I didn't. I'll see if I can find one. But, all right, I'm going to jump out here, too. I'm at the office. I'm ready to get going here, so... Maybe I'll catch you on the home. Like I said, it's a 4 o'clock day, thank God. So I'll be clear up yours on 8 PDF.
All right, cool. I'll catch up with you later. KE8RUH. Have a great day.
W8GAP.
TFM.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, good morning. Heading out to Novi.
No, I'm going to Oxford first. I had a customer up there, so I'll go there. Then I go to Southfield. I got to do lunch with a customer. And then Livonia.
That sounds like you'll be out there all day. Yeah, just heading to work. About those radios, Dave ordered that one. I don't know, 11K something 11. I don't know where he ordered that from. But the one, the other ones we ordered are from the Radtel website. Takes a long time to get them because they're coming from China.
And that one's the 860? Is that what it was, or the 900?
Yeah, that was the RT-860. Now, 900 is similar. It looks like the RT-490, the ones we already have, but it has HF, but I think it only goes down to 18 megahertz or 16 megahertz. The 900, that's been out for a couple of years. Well, according to the tracking, it's the radios are leaving or left Illinois, so then it'll probably come to a local post office, and then the post office will probably deliver it the rest of the way. Usually the way it works.
Yeah, like packages from Russia and China, because I forget that I ordered it, and it's like a surprise. Looks like an illegal package, and you forget what you bought. So, Yeah, every one of them looks suspicious.
Yeah, that's happened to me a couple times, but this one's going to be no surprise as I'm watching the tracking like a hawk. And yeah, I know what you mean. Usually it's like completely covered in that packing tape, and then it's got like string around it on top of that.
I should ask my board supplier why they do that. You know, sometimes he'll ship boards where he like makes the cardboard box so it's as small as possible, but he covers it with tape. I mean, he must use like a whole reel of tape just covering everything. And there must be a reason why they do that. Probably because there's always a lot of searching of packages and stuff and they don't want it open. Who knows? But yeah, they always cover it with tape. That's weird to me. It looks like too much work.
WADAP. Yep, know what you mean. And then you're like cutting into it and you're like trying to cut through it without cutting into the box too deep, you know? You don't want to cut the box or whatever's inside of it, but yeah. So I'm figuring usually when it hits the U.S. like that, it usually takes another week. So I'm good with that. I got enough radios.
Yeah, I don't need any more of them. I don't even use them. But every time you guys buy them, I can't help myself. It's like, just cheap enough that I'm going to see what it does. So, one of these days, I'll actually use them.
Yeah, it's usually in the $20, 20 to 30 range. I'm like, what the heck. Some of them are pretty good. A few of my new ones that I got are not chirp capable, which kind of blows, but I mean, it boils right down to it. I only put about 15 channels in it anyhow, so it's no biggie.
Yeah, I think I'd use them a lot more if I didn't have, mounted radios in the truck and the boat and downstairs in the basement. That's really the only reason why I don't use them. I think we should all just start using the UV-25. That should be the daily radio that everyone uses, big antenna.
Well, I have my suspicions. I don't know if yours came. Mine came with a couple antennas. One of that big, stupid, tactical antenna. Which actually works pretty good. Then there's that weird, bendy one that's got like the bulbous end to it. It's like, you know what I'm talking about, the one that kind of bends around like a gooseneck antenna with that little bulbous thing on the end. I think that's just hollow plastic. I'm going to take that off. If it is, I'm going to put a rubber cap on the end of it, so that big bulbous plastic thing.
Yeah, that antenna is ridiculous.
Well, the long tactical antenna actually works pretty good, but doesn't work that much better than like a 771 to warrant that ridiculous thing. I don't know, if you walk into a restaurant, that big tactical antenna on it, that would look pretty cool. But the bendy one is really not much better than a stock rubber duck. Like I said, I'm going to be... But someone said it's just hollow plastic.
If I ever make it to one of the breakfast meetups, that'll be the radio I bring with me. Bring the big one. That big silver antenna will be extended. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, you should split up the group in two tables, like, 30 feet apart, and talk back and forth to those big radios from one table to the other, simplex, or through the repeater. There you go.
Yeah, I was going to try last night to put that antenna in the attic, and then I got lazy. I made that bad mistake to do, I'm going to lay down for a second. Yeah, I should have done that. I got to try it again today, see if I can get that installed. See if it does any better. I doubt it. I think it's going to be just as good as the fire, but try to get in there tonight to see. I meant to do it before field day, but didn't get around to it.
Yeah, I put my balcony antenna back up and got in the house, turned the radio on. I was flipping through the channels, and then was an ISS pass. I go, oh, it's an ISS pass. It was just right overhead, so I waited for it to go down to about 70 degrees or so, and then I made a made two contacts. So, yeah, it's weird. The temperature just stayed like 37 all night, and I guess it's going to stay 37 all day today. Like the temperature didn't change, and it's not going to change.
I'm almost to Lake Orion. It's 34, and they're showing it'll get down to 33. That'll be the coldest today, so hope it don't warm up too much and screw up the ice fishing. I'm hoping to get back out again this weekend. I should drive up north for the day and go fishing, what I should do. I actually have Saturday free if I wanted to go.
The weather up north, I mean, there's just enough snow to go snowmobiling, so I'm not going up this weekend, but I hope it either doesn't melt or it snows a little bit more for the following. But yeah, I'm getting pretty close to work, too, so I've got about another mile or so to go, so I'm going to listen to the East Coast Reflector, see what the Brew Crew's up to this morning. So, all right, well, I'm going to be out here about 1 o'clock. There's an ISS pass at like 1:15, so I'll be out here 1 o'clock, 1:15. So if you're driving, listen to the ISS pass if you've got it in your radio.
Yeah, I forgot. I just added those channels to this radio, so I do have it. So. All right, cool. Yeah, I'll probably be driving back to my house at that time, or Livonia, depending on how things shake out. So. All right, man. We'll talk to you later. Take it easy. KTA-TFM, I am clear.
Yep. Talk to you later today, W-8-E-A-P.
A-B-A-P-R from W-A-W.
Well, water? Well, water? Yeah, no, I don't know if you got my message, but I think that when you're in the power position, clicking that wheel on puts it in the calibrate mode, so you take it to the calibrate, then you flip it down to SWR and it'll be accurate.
Oh, yeah, I have not seen your message. I've been out this morning, more physical therapy for my knee. Okay, I'll have to try that. I figured that click on that wheel had to have something going on. That's kind of an obvious statement, though. But if I want, if I want to see what my power out is, though, my forward power, wouldn't that, would it have to be in the power position? But if it's in the power position, it's just going to show me exactly where the calibration wheel was spun to. Or do I calibrate the wheel, put it in the SWR position, and then click the wheel to off? Because then when I go back up to power, it should show me something different.
When the wheel is clicked off, that's a power meter. When the wheel is clicked on, it's an SWR set meter. And its purpose is just to facilitate the SWR position on the other switch. You want power? Click the wheel off. You want SWR? Click it on, set, and then go to SWR.
Notice how bright it got in the room, in my car, because that light bulb above my head, the light just went on. Now I get it. Now I understand. Thank you for taking your time with me, Sean. You're probably rolling your eyes like, dude, come on.
Yeah, give that a whirl and see. So the reason that this whole thing became topical is because I'm concerned with the signal level you had into the receivers the other day. So throw it in line there and check it and see what your SWR is reading. And, you should have under, 1.5 to 1 in a perfect world. You won't hurt anything up to about 2 to 1, but, at 2 to 1, there's fixing to be had. Under 1.5 to 1, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. You want better, but that's pretty good. So, but anyhow, we just want to see what it is, because I wasn't real happy with what I was hearing from you that one day.
Yep, exactly. I understand. I will check that when I get home. Thank you again for helping me. You at work? What's going on?
Yeah, just sitting here trying to navigate. I got a whole bunch of juggling going on here today. Got somebody that was in the middle of a very important project called off. And then I had other guys assigned other projects, like jockeying people around the chessboard to keep things running. Down to a skeleton crew here because of it. Just one of those days. And it's Olga's salad and soup day for $5 at Olga's. I'd like to get here for that.
Soup. That makes me think of Walt. That makes me fondly think of Walt and his soup. I love about the different soups that he would make and have those for like 3 or 4 days straight. It was awesome. By the way, you're sounding distant. Are you on an HT there? I think you probably are. It just sounds like a fry.
Yeah, I'm going in. I've got an HT that has never given me any problems. I'm going into the UMP repeater, so I don't know if there's something going on there. I heard somebody else sound kind of like that the other day. Let me, I can switch to other means.
No, whatever you, it seemed like it just changed. It's back now. It was just transmission before the last one. It seemed a little distant. So I don't know what, maybe you just turned directions, but it sounded much better again. By the way, I'm on, let's see, where am I at? Rochester Road in Hamlin, which is what, 22-ish mile, maybe? I'm on the Warren repeater, obviously, again.
Yeah, I might have been, turning it away or holding it a long ways away. I wasn't really paying attention to where the radio was with respect to my alcohol. So may have been quiet because of that. Hey, you're sounding great. You're solid and, we're good up there. It's just that little pocket you're in sucks. So what are you going to do about that? All right, anyhow, I really do got to get back to things here. Figure out what all is going on. Like I said, it's just been a cluster today. So I got to get back on things.
Cool, Sean. Thanks again for helping me. Come in. Have a great one. KZ8Z.
Okay, and I will anxiously await the results of your test. Yeah, after you've done the CAL and then checked your SWR, then you flip the CAL off and just use it as a watt meter. So there you go.
And sometimes, you know, look, watt meters generally are, you know, they sum, you know, forward reflective power. It comes back and then it goes back and goes out, and it sums up. And so, if you know, look at what your power meter says, and if you see a change in that, you know, particularly if it's higher, that should, you know, check your SWR. You know, you may have something going on there. So once you know what your power setting is, you know, check the different settings on your radio with it and make a note. And then, you know, if you see any variation from that, then you want to check things out again. But normally you just leave it in power mode and you're all good. So, or you could leave it calibrated for a particular power level and leave it in SWR mode and watch instantaneous changes in SWR. But you'd have to calibrate it for if you had a drastic change in SWR, you'd have to calibrate it for that, whatever the forward reading is at that point. All right, anyhow, enough on all that. I'm going to get to it. Catch you later. Let me know when you have played with it and what you found. KZ8Z from W8FU.
Copy all that.
IAJ.
K8BB.
W8FU.
What's up? Looks like nobody wants to talk to you. KFA does.
And I got a phone call to do that.
NADBS.
Right as I'm backing in the driveway. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Man, I need those hours. You have a short day today? You're always out early. You're usually out around 4, right?
Yeah, I'm in 7:30, between 7:30 and 8, and I'm out between 3:30 and 4. But, you know, I'm normally in at 7:30, out at 3:30.
That ain't a bad deal.
For a bank. No, it's not. I mean, we only work 37 and a half hours a week, so we don't work full 40. So it seems like 9 to 5, you know, it seems like 8 hours, but we only get paid for 7 and a half. But, anywho, but we're paid, you know, they give us an annual fee, and then they just divide it by number of hours worked. So it ends up being a higher hourly rate, I guess, because we work less hours. We work like 1957 and a half hour a year as opposed to 2080, I think it would be. Anywho, like I said, I was just backing in the driveway. You're just starting your journey.
Yeah, I've just jumped in the truck and going to start making my way home here. It says 37 minutes. But, yeah, I would not mind working 40 or less. I'm not bad right now. I think I'm at between 45 and 50, depending on the week, but I think the drive is what wears me down, but I know you're at home. Glad. Get inside. Get cozy. I'll catch you later.
All right. Catch you in a bit. WNFU. Is this thing making it?
Was that you jumping in there a little bit ago? I couldn't tell if that was Sean or you.
It was me coughing, though. It's like not coughing until somebody wants to talk on the radio, and then I start coughing. What's up?
You a little under the weather or what?
I have no idea what it is. It's like random. It's like I'll be fine most of the day, and then all of a sudden start coughing. For no reason, almost like I inhaled dust or something. But I was out walking around to get the mail, and I was fine for that. But I come back in. There must be something in my house. I need to get an air filter, I think.
Have you checked your furnace filter since you moved in? I changed mine the other day because I imagine it was the one that was, you know, original. And it was like jet black. It was disgusting.
Yeah, I've already swapped it out 2 times, but I gotta go buy some more filters. I think I'm gonna go buy the whatever the better HEPA filter, you know, better quality ones. I just every time I'm in the at like Home Depot or whatever, I'm like, I need to get some furnace filters, but I'm like, oh crap, I don't remember what the size is. So you just reminded me to go down and check what size they are.
My house is also extremely dusty, and I think it's because we haven't, like, properly cleaned the basement. Like, I feel like I need to go down there with a electric power washer and spray all the walls and the joists and everything and get all the dirt and dust from the construction out of there, because I'll wipe my computer down every day, and the thing is just coated in dust.
Yeah, they power wash down here, and I do see some dust coming up here. They did power wash when we first moved in, but you see spots every once in a while where they missed it.
So I don't know what's changed, but since this morning, this radio is making the same noise as it once was. Not as bad, but I don't. I don't get it, man.
Can't win. It works fine at the factory until you hook it up. Unless there's something going on in your the way the power is in your truck, but I can't see that being the issue.
Only thing that's changed since this morning, I ordered a little RJ12 extender for my speaker, or my mic, and that's it. I got out of the truck, turned it on, and it's a funky, weird noise, and I don't understand. My 5100 didn't have any issues, you know, with these kinds of noises. I never, ever heard anything like it, and it's hooked up with the exact same power cable. So, I don't know.
I guess your ears are just sensitive to it or something. I don't know. So what's your plan? You think you're going to get rid of it for good and just say, the heck with it, I'll just get some Chinese radio?
I don't know, but as soon as I change the brightness back to max, it's gone. So, I have no idea, man. So now I got to put the 5100 back in the truck. Unreal.
Oh, you didn't sell it.
Nope, and I was smart enough to leave the existing control head cable up in my headliner, so it's pretty much plug and play. So I had this weird feeling that it was too good to be true.
Well, that's unfortunate, but I guess it is what it is. I mean, if it's doing it on mine, maybe I just don't notice it. You know, it's just not the, to me it doesn't bother, I guess it doesn't bother me because I got so much road noise anyways when I'm driving around that I wouldn't hear it unless it's totally quiet in the car.
It interferes with the audio. Like, it's not like it's a very sub-audible tone. I feel like there's enough audio files in our group, too, where we nitpick, you know, nodes and radios enough to be like, oh, yeah, I can definitely hear that. So I feel like yours and Sean's and all those guys, your radios are not doing what this one's doing. I would be shocked if they were and you couldn't hear it.
Hey, Theta. Does it go away if you turn off the front firing speaker? I know that's the reason why you have it, but I feel like if it's only the rear speaker or whatever, does it not do it?
So, I don't know. There's no good way of testing that because you cannot turn off the front speaker without having an external speaker plugged in.
Yeah, I was just going to say try it within. I'm curious if it goes away, if it's all the front speaker. All these issues are coming from the front speaker. Because if it is, then you know it's not in the audio chain. It's just something in that stupid speaker.
Well, I even replaced that speaker on the head, remember?
Yeah, I know. I'm wondering if it, I'm just one to make it usable and not annoying, just use the external speaker. I mean, I have both in mine. I have an external speaker and I have the head speaker. So I do both. And I don't do any of the fancy stuff, you know, how they have, like, you can delay it and, you know, do the different audio tones. I just leave it on flat. And that way I have both the front speaker and the external speaker. And I put the external speaker, like, down below in between the two seats. And I put the top, you know, the front one obviously is up in the head.
I don't know. Maybe I'll put it back on the bench, seeing if it's doing the thing. I don't get why it wasn't doing it, and now I'm convinced that's how it was when I got it, too. It wasn't doing it right away, and then, like, a day later, it started. But I talked to Sean and Anthony from my house all the way into the office today, and it sounded great, and I was so excited. I'm like,
I got my 500 back, and now it's doing the same thing. Like, it seems like it's getting worse the more I talk on it.
Gremlins in the machine, I guess. That's odd that it was fine this morning and now it's not. Like, what's changed and what is causing it? Is that maybe the battery, maybe your car battery was charged and now it's not charged? I don't know.
No, but seriously, I think that is part of it. Like, it's not doing it, and I've not changed anything.
The other thing you might want to try just for the sake of proving theories, disproving theories, is hook it up to an external battery, you know, get one of your light bulb batteries and use that as your power source just for fun.
Yeah, I might have to do that, but even before I sent it back the second time, I put it on my bench. And it was doing it there. So, I don't know, man. It's baffling.
Sell it, cut your losses, and buy a brand new one.
I thought about it, but it's just like, I don't know. At least now it's inconsistent, so maybe I can pinpoint it better. I don't, that doesn't make sense, but this gives me the ability to test some things. I've never been super happy with how I have power for my radios in this truck. It's just a fuse tap. But getting through the firewall in this truck's really difficult. I really don't feel like dealing with that.
Yeah, it's just annoying. Well, at least you're not saying, you know, screw this and getting out of this hobby. So, but I don't know what I would do in your shoes. Like, if this happened to me, what would I do? I don't know, I would feel bad selling it to somebody knowing that it had a problem in it, unless I disclosed it and they knew it and they wanted to buy it anyways. Or, I don't know. I would probably swap out with a different radio too, because I would not want to have a whiny humming noise or anything, you know, while I'm driving or anything like that. That would bother me too.
Dilemmas. Yeah, I don't know what I'm gonna do. The only like thing I can think of is, like you said, maybe the battery is somewhat, like, voltage is a little too low when the truck first turns on, because I didn't let my truck run before I jumped in it today. I was walking out and the remote started it and I got in. Typically, like this morning, the truck ran for probably 5-ish, 6 minutes before I jumped in it, giving the battery, and I'm trying to get back up, but it's a brand new truck. I've got not even 13,000 miles on it. There's no way the battery's already bad.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I can tell you what I did. I bought one of those little, I think I've shown it to you before. It's like $50, and what it does is it ensures that 13.8 volts is coming. You know, whatever input comes in, it can vary between a certain range, but the output is always 13.8. It makes sure that it's always 13.8. It's kind of like the, what do you call those things? The buck booster, buck lower. I don't know. It's a buck converter, and it's just a beefier one that can handle up to like say 25 watts. I think, or 25 amps. Sorry, not watts. And it always keeps 13.8 coming out, because before I would, you know, in my car, whenever it would go to the auto stop or whatever, it would always go down to 11.8 volts for some reason, or it wouldn't drop the voltage until the engine started back up. You know, I needed to start the engine back up, and it would have a momentary drop of 11.8, and it would always shut off my radio, so I got tired of that. So I got one of those on mine, and then Ryan, W8RJD Ryan, he bought the same thing too, because he was having the same problem with 300. So this is common with the Yaesu radios, but yours isn't shutting off, so I think you're fine there, but it's something else you could try, but it, you know, I hate to have you spend money on a problem that still would exist.
Yeah, I mean, It sounds like it's trying. I'd have to look at the specs, but does it always draw from the battery? Like, is it kind of like a capacitor, or does the truck need to be on, or how does that work?
Yeah, you just put it in line. So you know how you have your power source. You just put it in line from the wherever you plug it in. So what I did is I put power poles on both ends, and I basically just it goes in between the source and your radio, and I can take it out. I can take it out in line. I can leave it in. I can take it out. I mean, I leave it on. I leave it in. But that's how I did it. Because next car, I'm going to want to put it in there, so I'm going to just, all I have to do is disconnect it and put it in the new car or whatever. But, so, the other thing, too, is, if you use an external battery, a LiPo battery, you kind of do the same thing. You can leave it at, it'll be at 13.8 volts consistently if it's fully charged up to a certain point. So that would if you try that first, that way you don't have to buy anything. Try that first, and it's still having problems, and it's not your car.
Well, I'm positive it's not interference in the truck, because it doesn't do it on the ICOM, and it's not doing it on this one. I doubt I've got another defective board in this radio, so that pretty much leaves power, right? Because it's the same antenna, same power cord, same everything. So I can try another battery, and I'm pretty confident it'll be totally fine. Because I tested it last night in the house with my Alinco power supply, and that's when I was like, oh my god, it sounds so good. And then I've tested it before with with my Bluetti, and I do have a Bioeno I can use now, but yeah, that's interesting. I would be curious. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab my voltmeter maybe tomorrow morning and just check the battery and then keep it on it when the truck starts and just see what that voltage starts at. I'm willing to bet since it's cold, that voltage drops a little bit. The truck's not running, the alternator's not running. The radio doesn't like it. It makes an annoying noise. Whether or not there's capacitors in the radio is being charged up or whatever, and then after a bit it's fine. So that's my theory.
Yeah, if you have some way to put a voltmeter in between your radio and the power source, just kind of leave it there, one of those digital ones or whatever, and just watch, have it in view. So, like, if you stop, if you're driving around, whatever you're doing, you can monitor it, see if it drops or anything like that, and just visually monitor it.
This is where I need something like MeshTask to just log it all so I can see the ups and downs. It'd be really cool if this frickin' radio told me the voltage.
Alright, I'm going to have to let you go. I need to look for something for my wife. She needs batteries. I may be back, or I will talk to you later. KFS.
Sounds good, man. I'll talk to you. That ain't DDF.
NHKPP.
What's going on in Wally's world? KF8S.
Believe it or not, we are pretty busy at the office, so I've been a little bit scarce on the radio. I'm spending a lot of time in the office, which I don't like. I'd rather be driving around. That way I can talk. But that hasn't been the thing, so playing with the MeshTastic a little bit. I have yet to hit any nodes via RF. All of them are at MQTT, which is basically internet chat, which is no earth revolving thing. So So either you got to wait for people to get closer, or I'm going to have to get an antenna up in the air. But I think I'm going to probably do the other one, the first one, wait till people get closer. How about you, Dave?
Just watching my script download and download from one place and upload to another. So it's like watching paint dry, but it's kind of cool that it's working. Yeah, as far as Meshtastic goes, yeah, there's not too many. Seems like the nodes are kind of sparse. There is one in Chesterfield Township, though. I would think that you'd be able to hit that one at least, or either that or we just got to wait until Sean puts up the big mega tower one in Mount Clemens, and then things will be a little bit easier. So when I was in Grand Rapids, though, I was able to hit things. So it's just a matter of getting somebody has to get one node up high, and then it'll work pretty good.
Yeah, I was watching some videos on how that worked, and actually what they can do with that low of power is pretty impressive. I didn't quite understand it. Of course, I really didn't want to understand it, but they were pushing it forward and backwards, the signal. So it was kind of like a little beacon type thing. So it was looking, you know, they were showing that it would go, you know, of course they had the noise, and then it would retract itself and look. You know, so I could see how it doesn't take much for it to capture things. So that part of it was pretty impressive. But, you know, in order for them to be off the grid, yeah, I'm guessing you're right, you know, that we got to wait till we get something up real, real high. But, yeah, even that Chesterfield one, you know, even with my circle of influence, I did put it by the window near the southwestern exposure. And I did buy a really good antenna, you know, a whole $9 antenna instead, you know, third of the cost of the unit. And I did put it there, and it hit a couple things, but, you know, like it does it in the middle of the night. And then it says, well, look, found a new node. I go, look, and then, of course, the new node is gone the next day. You know, you can't touch it. So, but other than that, it's doing good. What's going on in your life? You doing anything exciting? I'm still playing around a lot with this SDR stuff. I find that pretty exciting. So, mostly playing around with the 800 stuff, watching how that works. That just floors me how advanced that is. I know it's like 15, 20-year-old technology, but it just floors me how it works and how they do it. All those entities talking on basically 20 channels. It is amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of be cool if we could do that in the ham radio, but you'd have to have everybody be organized for that. Because, you know, I guess the way it's working, right, is a control channel, and the control channel is telling you where the talk groups are and all that stuff, and then those are spread across 20 different channels or whatever. Like, it's kind of just like, it's like leased channels. It's kind of like how we do with DMR, right? You have a talk group active on that one, and then eventually it's idle, but in this case it's a little bit more sophisticated. It's the control channel, like saying this is where it's going to be, this is where you should be, and all that stuff. And I think that's what you're using for that SDR trunking software or whatever. But yeah, I should try that. I have one of those RTL dongles. I have an SDR play as well. I'm not sure if it'll work with that, but yeah, it's interesting. And you know, with the Meshtastic, you know, think of Meshtastic more like, it's more like packet radio. It's just sending little packets of information out. And the more bandwidth that it uses, the faster it can transmit, but also is a shorter range. So then the really slow is going to be less bandwidth, and it'll go farther, but you can't put as much messages into it. So it's the same as HF. You know, whenever you see, you know, with the Winlink and all that stuff, they're doing the same thing in FT8. It's just a variation of all that stuff. So, and I saw Captain Don was playing with Hellschreiber last night with Fred. That was funny.
Yeah. So I'll get back to this part of the conversation. So maybe I should try slow to see if that works, just to see if I can pick anything up. We'll come back to that. But, yeah, the way that works is, yeah, so at least in my eyes, you're pretty close. You key it, control channel, it gives you a frequency, and then basically a talk group is just like a whole bunch of private lines, you know. And so, you know, you don't hear it unless you've got the same PL. So if you let go and you let it set a long time, you know, for such a long time, you let it go, poof, it'll give you another frequency, and then whatever PL you're telling it to talk on, you know, which is a talk group, that's how it works. Now back to the meshtastic part. You're saying that if I tried slow, the slow one instead of the fast one, I might have better luck, or can I only talk to slow ones?
If you're doing your own private thing, you could change the modem speed or whatever you want to call it, but everybody's using long fast, so it wouldn't do you any good to change it. So supposedly the meshtastic developers have worked it out, which one is the, you know, not too hot, not too cold thing, and they settled on long fast. So everybody's using the long fast protocol, which is 256 kilohertz wide of bandwidth. But it sends it really fast. So that's why they call it long fast, I guess. It's sending really fast. It's kind of like the median. You can go as high as like 512 kilohertz bandwidth. So the only way you can see that stuff is on an SDR. You can't, like, if you took a radio and put it to like the 906 megahertz, you're only gonna see like a tiny sliver of the transmission. But if you put it on SDR, because you're playing with SDRs, if you put it on 906.875 as the center frequency, and then turn off your meshtastic device, and then turn it back on, when you turn it on, it sends a bunch of pulses right away, letting everybody know, hey, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. And you can kind of get a visual sense of how it works.
You know what? I'm going to do that. 906 what?
906.875. So 906.875. So almost 907, but not quite, 906.875.
Yeah. Well, if I hit it for 907, it'll find it. So, yeah, I'm going to do that because that would be kind of cool to watch. And then I could see it, actually, that'd be kind of cool. And listen to it. You can hear the little things you put in analog mode. It'll actually let you hear off the noises it sends. So that I think I'm going to do. The other thing, too, Sean said that on your website you were saying mqtt.whocaresradio.com. I take it that's no longer a thing. Everybody's using the default meshtastic.org.
No, the who cares thing is still working. That's the one we can use. And what happens is it has an upstream. So anything that goes into that one goes to the Michigan one, the global one. And the global, I'm only doing Michigan. So I'm subscribed to, like, the Michigan stuff, and all that comes through here. So you get the benefit of that, and also I'm uploading to a map publishing website as well. So the benefit you get of using the Who Cares MQTT is that not only do you see the Michigan traffic and the Who Cares traffic, it also gets the map data from another site. So it's all done kind of behind the scenes. They're like a proxy to the global one. So that way, if, say, the global one goes down, we're still able to work, as long as my server still works, right? So it's kind of like a good way to decentralize it. So we're participating with the wider net, but we're also, like, if they go down for some reason, we're still able to run around and do stuff.
Okay, and I changed that one to whocaresradio.com. That's correct, right? mqtt.whocaresradio.com. And then, because that's where I had it, and then maybe it could have been somebody else that told me that that fell by the wayside. So I went back to the standard one. That one was .org. So just to confirm, it's your entire website, .com.
Yeah, just repeating it for clarity. MQTT.WhoCaresRadio.com. And you got to make sure that the root path is US/ well, whatever the default is, you want to put MI next to it. So they'd be like, I think it's MSH in lowercase / US / MI for Michigan. As long as you got that, you should be good for the root path.
Oh, very good. Okay, I will play with that here in a little bit. So, okay, I gotta let you go. I got a work call coming in. Believe it or not, NAKPPCD.
See you later. I'm gonna go hide on the other one. KFADS.
WAEAP. KFAS from WAEAP. KEATFM. WAEAP. There's a step in the dark. Gosh, forgot your call. WRC?
There's just nobody out here. KEA, TFM.
WRCY. I just called for you about 30 seconds ago. Where'd you go?
I think there was a double in there.
You looking for W8RCY and you couldn't remember my call sign?
That's bad.
Well, if you'd get out there more often. No, I was calling Davian and then he didn't answer, so I called you incorrectly, but you got the gist of it, and then he keyed up, I think.
Yeah, I'm stuffing my face with a Whopper. I'm getting ready to go to my archery league and I stopped it. Burger King to eat some dinner. So I was eating while you were calling. KEATFM.
All right, man. Stuff your foxola. I don't want to interrupt, but RCY, where you been, man?
I did a pair of round trips previous 2 weeks to Daytona Beach, Florida to work the Rolex 24-hour race.
What? The Molex or Rolex?
Rolex as in watch.
Oh, I didn't know they had a 24 hours. I know they had a 24 hours of them all.
I believe that's coming up in June. I don't know if they changed the dates or not, but yeah, this is the American version, and the nice thing about it is the rules now have combined to the point where those who used to race in Le Mans can come here now and do the Rolex here in the United States, and vice versa. So, it's a two-week-long party for those who go to it. It's all that just for a 24-hour race. It's a sight to behold, for sure. But, it was my first time back in, I haven't been there in 3 years. So 2022 was the last race I worked for the Rolex. And with me being off sick and my mother, passing away a year ago, put a damper on things. So this is my first time back. I'm going to do 1 year of about five or six, is it six endurance races, and then I'm going to officially retire myself.
There you go. Well, it sounds like fun. We shall go out having fun. So what are your responsibilities besides charging batteries and radios, I take it? No, I'm just kidding. Well, what do? When you work the race, set up the communications, pick a frequency, or...
I honestly don't even touch the radios. I mean, I have my own radio, obviously, and I have my own communications, and they would maintain it for me. But no, they have companies come in and do all that. I work in race control, which is rules and regulations, and race operations, which is track control and management.
Kind of like a referee, almost.
Yeah, but I mean, we just go by the track officials. But yeah, I've done it for, what is it now? I started in 92, so this would be like, what, my 33rd year, but I haven't worked 33 straight years. The illnesses and things like that, and a couple other political issues, but yeah, I would probably have about 28 to 30 years in when I give it up at the end of this year.
Well, how do you know if they're cheating? I mean, do you have binoculars and you have spotters? You have people like staked out around the track to let you know if some hanky-panky's going on?
There are eyes everywhere. There are human eyes. There are cameras. There's a lot of little tools and tricks to the trade that we use. As far as the technical side, we have you have inspectors to make sure the car is legitimate. And there's no cheating or anything like that going on. It's a very complicated process. And but yeah, we have ways of finding out. And so there's pre-race checks and tests, post-race tests, checks, inspections, you name it. In fact, one car did get eliminated. First place car in the LMP2 class got to be eliminated because the ride height of the car at the end of the 24 hours was too low by about 2 millimeters. And they're blaming it on a failed suspension, and we couldn't find the suspension failure, so they got bumped off the podium, so to speak. I don't know all of it that happened because I wasn't there, but you know, some of these things take a couple days to find out, and you know, here we are 3 days later, it was announced.
Well, an easy way to cheat would be to let some air out of your tires when you're being measured, and then put the air back in, and then if they suspect anything, pump a few more pounds of air in, raise it up. I mean, 2 millimeters, it's not much. You can adjust that with your tire pressure, I think.
Well, that's why you usually see officials standing around a race car at the end of a race, especially like the top, anywhere from 1 to 10 place finishers, because those people get points, and they inspect every car that's within the points to make sure nobody was cheating, running illegal, or something happened. I mean, if a suspension piece was actually damaged, then they would look at it a different way, but they could not find the damage they're claiming it was to be significant enough to cause that kind of a problem. Again, I don't know the whole story. The announcement came out this afternoon.
An RC racing, if you like, you'd measure the ride height of the cars, and while you're waiting, you'll be squeezing them, rubber tires, squeezing them down like a flat spot, so when they measured it, how'd they do that? They'd make the tire out of round, and they'd roll it so till it was the highest. Or something, and they bash the wheel back down to round or something. I don't know, it was something. I never did it, but I heard about it. But
radar, see Wi-Fi identification.
Yeah, I haven't done technical since I worked in the IndyCar series, but yeah, there's ways. I mean, everybody tries to cheat the rule book. Everybody tries to interpret the rule book differently, and you know. But that's why we have all these pre-race testing sessions, and you know, the cars do go through a technical inspection before the race, and the standards are set. And if they're outside the tolerances, plus or minus, you look at it as to why, and if it was, you know, an accidental thing, okay, it can maybe cut you some slack. But if it's not an accidental thing and the car is out of spec, you're disqualified. That simple.
Yeah, WAEAPitis. It's something, there was some class of racing, some class of stock car where you're only allowed to run a two-barrel. And what they would do is create little vacuum leaks. And if you jetted the carburetor, Rich, and then you had a vacuum leak, that would increase your... They actually put a car on a dyno and proved that you can get... Like, they had a two-barrel race car, and they, like, introduced some vacuum leaks, and it went up like 5 horsepower. You can gain like 5 horsepower by a vacuum leak. So, never knew that. That was a new one on me.
Well, I've never seen the NASCAR rule book, but I believe those engines now might be fuel-injected versus carburetor. I'm not sure. Again, I've never read the rule book, but... in our class of racing, you know, you have normally aspirated and turbocharged. You have, in the prototype class, you have hybrids now. It's just insane. Even when I was away for almost 3 years, I got the new rule book in just after the first of the year, and I looked at it and I read through it. I just said, thank God I don't do this full-time anymore. I only had to know a certain part of the book. For what I was doing those 2 weekends, but still, the technology has changed so much, and it just blows my mind. But you know, you have 3 classes of racing, 4 levels overall, 61 cars on the track, and all 3 classes, actually 4 classes, are racing in their own races, all simultaneously at the same time. So. It's a timing and scoring nightmare, but thank God for electronics for things like that. But we still have to do manual work in case the electronics fail. So, yeah, it's people think I do go down there and have fun. No, there's a lot of work. There's a lot of work involved. I'm still doing some little bit of paperwork, but not much. And I just, you know, I'll just fax it all in.
Very good. Anyhow, I am home, sitting in the driveway. I need to get inside to care some business. So, nice talking to you again. I haven't talked to you in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks now. So, glad you're still sitting up and taking nourishment. So, all right, man. We'll catch you later. Maybe I'll catch you out there tomorrow. And Davian, I'll talk to you later, too. WAEAP.
Likewise, it's always good talking to you and, you know, your sense of humor and so on and so forth. Yeah, do take care. I got my nourishment and I had White Castles tonight, so, yeah, that's my nourishment. W8RCY. And to everybody out there, have a good night. We're clear.
W8RCY to the AAP-72 here at 7 good night, KPKGL Mobile.
Good evening, Cujo. Just waving a hand. W8RCY, you have a good evening as well. We're clear.
DBF from WAFU.
AFAS, 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 AFA